go. Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome everybody to Season 2, Episode 15 of Cinematica. I'm Dan Slevin, and here with me in the Cinematica studio is...
It's me, Simon.
And Kaylee.
Hello. In today's episode, handsome young movie stars battle it out with the older generation this week. Channing Tatum gets his kit off in Magic Mike. Robert Pattinson sacrifices the spangles and goes back to 19th century Paris in Bel Ami. Meanwhile, Olympia Dukakis and Brenda Fricker go to Canada to get married in Cloudburst. And William Hurt and Isabella Rossellini try and restoke the fires of passion in Late Bloomers. All of that and more in this week's exciting episode of Cinematica. But first, before we get into that, what is in the mailbag? Kaylee.
Yes, hello, hello. Let's see. So starting out, we have some Batman two-word reviews still coming in as people go to see it. So Shane007R. Batman two-word review, fabulous finale, keep up the great work. So I don't know if we're meant to keep up the great work.
We'll take it.
But yep. We'll take it.
We are.
Yeah. So sounds good. In opposition, Rudy Six, two-word review for Batman is decreasing success, but clarifies that Cinematica cast is still a success.
Yay, yay for Rudy.
Yay. And then, of course, we have some New Zealand Film Festival two-word reviews. So from David Sinclair 79, two-word review for Beasts of the Southern Wild, imaginative life force.
Mm. I am so envious of... and it's the first year that I've ever been envious of Aucklanders getting to see these a week early. I hate social media. It's actually making me miserable.
Oh,
so yeah. I used to not care. I used to think Wellington will turn up when it turns up and I'll just enjoy it. But I've been reading people's tweets, like a few from some of our listeners. Adzabil, who's a regular listener, he's tweeted about the NZFF. In Darkness, his two-word review, Subterranean Redemption. Mm-hmm. And Toby, etc., I'm not sure if he is actually a listener, but anyway, his NZFF two-word review for Moonrise Kingdom is Pistachio Romance, and Cabin in the Woods, his two-word review, Horror Cocktail, or Retractable Bong.
I think you've got to ignore it. You've got to stand down from this stuff. Just turn off the social media machine and go into the festival without all of these little hints and
I know. You know, it's just making me mad.
Mm.
And it's in the same way that maybe I should stop watching trailers and stop reading reviews. Just don't
it's
do
like
it.
It's like a review coming out before it should.
Yeah,
it's trouble. It's trouble.
Indeed. All right, time to get into our reviews, which are going to come out right when they're supposed to. Oh, sorry, I've jumped the gun. No, thanks for waving that at me.
But first.
But wait, before,
there's more.
Mm, what have Kiwis been going to see this week? And you get one guess.
Yes. Well, in the top five, everything has just been bumped down by one spot. But I'll start with number five to have a bit of drama. Will you wait? Yep. Seeing number five is Brave. Number four, The Amazing Spider-Man. Number three, Ice Age Continental Drift, which is hanging in there in the top five.
Considering school holidays are over.
Yeah. Number two is Ted. And number one, The Dark Knight Rises.
Hmm.
We get one at the box office.
Indeed. And now, it's interesting, the Dark Knight Rises, I went to see it a second time, which is not common for me. Usually time is very short, but I on a purely sort of technical level, I wanted to compare the 35mm version of The Dark Knight Rises with the DCP digital version, considering Christopher Nolan, the director, has made such a song and dance about 35mm being the perfect way to watch anything, let alone his film. And I have to say that on Friday night watching the DCP, the colours were richer, the grass was greener, and even Matthew Modine's dress uniform, as he steps out of the line, his cop uniform, the gold braid on his shoulders were just popped off the screen.
What about the sound?
Well, there's a difference between watching it in a relatively small auditorium and then the Embassy theatre on Friday night, the big embassy screen, which was loud. It was loud, and the Bane voice. I can't even do this.
Did you find it was clearer?
Through all the subs, like it doesn't even come through any of the speakers apart from the sub. It's just incredibly deep. That was it was resonant. The sound was amazing, and it's something that about DCP that I think that you know, it's totally uncompressed sound, isn't it?
So he was a bit easier to understand.
No more easy. It was louder, if anything. It was just
louder and more muffled.
The distortion was more. Just everything was more.
Okay.
Yeah, that's sort of how it felt. But so for Christopher Nolan, if he's listening, and I'm sure he is, just to let you know, you're wrong. 35mm is not the way to see.
But it's a beautiful result, him shooting on it. It looked fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not like it didn't look like film. It did look like film.
No, but he doesn't shoot on 35. Did he shoot this one on IMAX as well?
Did he shoot it all on IMAX? That's an interesting question.
I need to research that.
I had a bit of a Batman sort of frenzy this week because I was quite keen to see to remind myself what the middle film, the Dark Knight, was like to see from a comparison point of view. And watching that on home video, which of course is the only way to watch it nowadays, the ratio changes for the IMAX sequences. So
you could have actually gone to the screenings before Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, I could have. But that would have involved staying up really late at night. I wasn't really up for that. And I didn't actually think about it until after I'd seen Dark Knight Rises the second time. It just didn't occur to me that it would be a useful thing.
It was amazing how many people supported those films.
Oh, yeah.
In the day or so before. Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. Fantastic. And many of those, I think, are people who are going, are the same people who sold out the Back to the Future when it played on the big screen again. So there is definitely a desire to watch these films on the big screen as nature intended. Unfortunately, I made my decision too late to allow that to happen. But anyway, it's weird on watching something go change ratio in the middle of a film and then change back in the middle of a scene. It goes and
if you don't. He was moving his arms. If you didn't pick that up,
it made sense to me. Anyway, time to bring us bang up to date and start the review section of today's show.
The law says that you cannot touch,
but I think I see a lot of lawbreakers up in this house.
So how do you know my brother?
I'm an entrepreneur. I manage a few businesses. I'm
trying to hit on my sister.
Okay, good talk.
Entrepreneur, stripper, stripper, entrepreneur.
Either one.
I was hoping this was all a joke.
It's pretty funny.
All right, Magic Mike, one of the most awaited films of the year.
Here out of the back corner of the Cinematic
over
Studio.
There. At Cinematic Towers, yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't one for me to look out for this year.
You weren't sort of on the edge of your seat waiting?
It wasn't on my list. Hooks? No, it wasn't on my list. But yeah.
Well, let's see if this review changes your mind.
Let's go.
Kaylee.
Magic Mike. All right, since I've been
our male stripper correspondent.
Yes, since I've been talking about this film for how long now on Cinematica, how excited I am about it. So, if you don't know what Magic Mike is about, it is the new Steven Soderbergh film based loosely on the experience of the star Channing Tatum when he was a 19-year-old stripper before he hit it big as in acting, and it's about young man Channing Tatum sort of takes him under his wing, gets him into the male exotic dancing scene. This young man sort of starts kind of getting himself in trouble. Meanwhile, Channing Tatum has fallen in love with his sister, and there's drama, and there's drugs, and there's excitement, and there's stripping, and there's so much stripping, and it just doesn't end. There's some drama, and there's some talking, and then boom, you're back in the strip club, and it's just in your face all the time. So much thrusting.
Did you lose your eyesight?
I needed a nap afterwards. Yeah. I was exhausted.
I was gonna say, in your face. Yeah. Okay.
so much. You were there, Dan.
I know.
You don't know.
And we Kaylee and I went to one of those chicks at the Flicks screenings.
Chicks at the Flicks is the only way you can experience Magic Mike.
It was something else. And I arrived early and found a seat by myself. And so I was sitting there as the only solo man at this screening of about 400 young women, and it
ready
was
ready and willing young women. Let me tell you, they were quite excited.
It was probably the best way to experience it. You're absolutely right. But I thought I really should have brought my notebook so everyone knew I was a reviewer. You know, that was the reason why I was sitting like Nigel.
I think
no mates.
There were some guys dragged along by girlfriends.
Yeah,
as
but
well.
No, I was the only one sitting by themselves.
Yeah. But
Will you, Kelly?
I was sitting with a group of girlfriends.
Oh, right. Yeah, she was with girlfriends.
I was right at the front. I was right at the front. I was in the front row. I was right, yeah. Right there.
Yeah, right. Foot butt on the screen.
And other things.
Yes.
I think the two, with the audience we were with, there's two fantastic moments. One was the opening shot of the film where Channing Tatum gets out of bed and it's like the second, third shot is his bum close up on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a loud gasp and giggles from the women in the audience. And the second gasp and giggles was when we get introduced to all of his counterparts.
Mm.
And, you know, they're sitting there talking and the camera cuts and turns around. And it's Joe Manganiello, something like that. Mm. Anyway, he plays
Mighty Manganiello.
He plays a werewolf on True Blood, and you could hear all the True Blood fans in the background go, because they knew they were finally going to get to see his junk.
Right. And let's be honest here, it's a genuine R16, isn't it?
It is.
And it's not that, it's not coy about sexuality, and it's not coy about things that a lot of Hollywood movies are.
Mm.
It's not coy about nudity, even though the strippers themselves push up to the limits but don't go beyond it. Backstage, of course, is a different story.
Yes.
So just in case anyone thinks that this is a classic sort of Hollywood skirt around the details, it isn't.
No, and it is actually, it's entertaining.
Mm.
It is a Steven Soderbergh film, and he's kept his signature kind of realism style where a lot of the arguments and conversations don't feel scripted. They feel like they are improvised, which is quite good.
Mm.
So it brings this really kind of authentic sense to the film, and which I think helps. I think if anyone else directed this film, it'd be really, really camp and really kind of uninteresting, but Soderbergh kind of keeps drawing you in with these dramatic moments. It's like bam, back
it's really
to stripping,
it's really, you know? Well, it's really well structured. Mm. I think that without the stripping, the drama would be a little bit samey.
Mm.
And without the drama, the stripping would be, you know, kind of pointless. So I think it's got a really good balance to it.
Yeah, and I also have to do a special shout out to Cody Horn, who plays the female love interest in the film, because she was fantastic. Like, she fit. She's done mostly TV, but she fits so well and it was so natural in her role that she really kept me interested and wanting to keep watching to see what happened with her character, because she was just such an ease on screen. She was a fantastic presence whenever she was there.
There are a couple of things that I'd like to add to this discussion, and one is, in fact, that Alex Pettufer plays the young guy, the teenager who is inspired by Channing Tatum's original story, and I've been kind of rude about him in the past in print and here, I think, and because, you know, he's been pretty bloody awful in everything that I've seen, and he's, you know, pretty boy, dull, witless. But he's really good. He's really good in this. And I was like, oh, right, maybe you do have something about you that I didn't see before, or you weren't showing before. You needed a director like Soderbergh and a character that's maybe a little bit closer to what you know. But so I want to apologize to him if he's listening, which he is.
Clearly.
Yeah, always.
Yeah, you know, that I'm big enough to be able to hold my hand up and say, sorry, you look like you're turning into something decent. And actually, I have done the same thing to Channing Tatum in the past as well. I was a bit scornful of his talent, and he has turned this year into a movie star.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a really relaxed, charismatic, I mean, obviously easy on the eye, but, you know, it's a challenge for somebody who's has got the kind of physique that he has to still be somebody that men can appreciate, a movie star that men can understand, and really only The Rock has done that since Schwarzenegger, you know. So I think that, you know, that Channing Tatum's turning into a movie star, and I think that his choices are getting really good, and I think that he's certainly relaxed a whole heap on screen, and definitely a very, very watchable individual. So, yeah, star is born, really, in that sense. Magic Mike, a lot of fun. If you go with the right group, you can make it even more fun, I reckon. So, yeah, definitely a recommendation from myself. Two words, Kaylee.
Yes, I have two words. I just want to put in I found this really great short review on IMDb today, and I just had to share it. From Jim Gilligan, it's in the IMDb user review section. He says, "This might come as a shock to some, but this is not really a movie about male strippers. Yes, two of the principal characters are male strippers, but as Channing Tatum's character, Magic Mike himself, says at a crucial point in the film, that's what I do. It's not who I am. Amid the bountiful butt cheeks and brawny pecs on display, there's a real story here about ambition and goals and loyalty and commitment and self-actualization. Yes, I used the term self-actualization in a review of Magic Mike. I told you might be shocked."
Mm. Well, it's and also structurally, it's like it's all about Eve as well, isn't it? In lots of ways, so it's definitely, you know, it's got some really solid bones to it, and yes, so now I suppose two words
are strapping sensation.
Nice work. Woo! Mine Channing's choice, because I think that he's turned into a movie star that I'm gonna be looking out
I'm
for.
Hoping Channing's choice is like a TV series he has when he's like in his 60s, and it's like a it's a variety show
indeed. All right.
This is Adam, my husband.
I don't know how you've managed to stay together for so long. How did you do it?
I'm old. And you are old. Practical, isn't it? It makes me feel like my entire life could be summed up in five lines. Brabim, brabam, brabim, boom, bam.
Late Bloomers is the name of the next film for discussion. And
I love Isabella Rossellini. She's so great.
She's a grace.
Yeah, she is great. Usually. And
lead on.
I would say, so I'm guessing that nobody else around the table got to see this. I know that in Wellington, very, very limited release, one cinema only, and so I would imagine it'd be similar around the rest of the country.
It is.
Quite a little bit tricky to find.
Mm.
This is a film about a couple who, they keep talking about how old they are, but they're not really. They're just about to turn 60. And one of whom, William Hurt, is an architect who has just been given a sort of lifetime achievement award. His wife, Isabella Rossellini, has retired from teaching and is sort of casting around what to do next. And he gets encouraged by the young members of his practice to apply for a competition to build, well, this is kind of a bizarre idea, but a Louvre art museum only on the banks of the Thames. So, you know,
just do it.
Right. So, and of course he's been building airports all his life. So this would be a major dramatic change in his career. And so he's not sure whether he's up for it at his age.
Where do they land?
On the Thames.
On the Thames.
If it's good enough for the Hudson River, you can land an aeroplane anywhere.
That's true.
So, the problem I have with this film is that, first of all, it does make this assumption that somehow, you know, when you're in your late 50s, it really is the home stretch, and you, all you're thinking about is how to, you know, it's the final stages of life, which is, you know, not the case at all. But also, it's just so slow and ponderous. And I sat I know we're not supposed to review audiences on this show, because that's not really very fair, except that I was the youngest person in the audience by a factor of about 20 years, I would say. And we know from experience that older audiences, they do like to talk through films. They do like to explain to each other what's going on and go, "Oh, that's her off the telly. Yeah. That's Jennifer."
We all have our vices though, don't we? Because the younger you become, the more you get this blue screen appearing and texting and
yeah, that's
and
true. That's true too. I'm not saying that anybody else is perfect, but it occurred to me that this film is actually perfect for that older audience that likes to likes to have a bit of a natter because there are long gaps where nothing happens, you see, and you're not
interrupting. It doesn't really affect anything.
No, exactly. You're not interrupting anything. So in that sense, it should find an audience amongst the amongst that
crowd. I got that sense from everything I've read about it, you know, scanning the waves and reading about it, and I kind of,
The characters like are frustrating.
Confirmed everything.
Yeah, like Isabella Rossellini, a wonderful screen actor with a fantastic lineage, but her character is frustrating. She, in terms of, in fact, the couple, they don't talk to each other, and everything about their situation would have been resolved with one conversation.
They probably are married then, for a long time.
I wouldn't know. William Hurt disappointing because he doesn't really change throughout the film, and it never really shows any passion. And maybe that's the point too, that we're looking at an upper middle class couple who have been together for a long time and don't know how to express any passion in their lives anymore. We'll talk a little bit later on about another film that does the exact opposite. But for this particular one, Late Bloomers was a massive disappointment to me, considering the caliber of the people involved. Nice, and there was a bit of laughter of recognition from the audience around me, that a lot of that sort of the things about getting older, having to go and buy a new telephone with big numbers on the keypad and what have you. But again, these characters, they're not in their dotage, you know, they're not about to be shipped off to a retirement home. They're just in their late 50s, or they're just reaching the end of a career, not necessarily the end of their lives. And so I just wonder whether the film itself made some assumptions that aren't necessarily true. Two words for late bloomers: senior snooze.
There you go.
Yeah. Time for some news.
Thank you. Obviously, the major movie news of the week is the shooting at the Aurora, Colorado screening of The Dark Knight Rises. One feel-good aspect of the story, and there are very few, is the unexpected visit of Batman star Christian Bale to the Aurora Medical Center on Tuesday afternoon. Although there was a big Facebook and Twitter campaign to try to convince him to come, so obviously he was listening to that, which is good.
I saw a tweet from somebody today that said, well, that's all well and good, but, you know, he doesn't strike me as the kind of person that actually gets told what to do.
Yeah,
you know.
Sure.
So you know.
Yeah, and it was in the media release. It was his own. They made it sound like it was his own decision to go. It wasn't anyone's decision telling him to do so.
Yeah.
Which is great.
And he spent the whole day there.
He met
a lot of people, and
lots of photos were tweeted today as well, with him, with the staff and the patients there. And he also met with Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper. So,
indeed. So, you know, a pretty bloody awful story all round, really. I'm not sure if there's very much that we can add to it here, except to express our horror. And you know, we love cinemas. This is a show that's all about going to the movies and sitting in rows in the dark with a bunch of strangers. And, you know, it's supposed to be a place where you feel safe, and to know that there are people that think otherwise is a pretty awful situation.
And Christopher Nolan put it really well, is that the cinema is a safe place, and is somewhere where he and many of us have grown up, and that the fact that someone has violated that is quite horrific and quite shocking for a lot of people who go to cinema quite a bit. So our condolences go out to everyone involved.
And the other worry for me is that I land in Denver in about a month.
Avoid the cinemas in Denver.
Avoid the cinemas in Denver.
I shall
straight into the rental car, because apparently the sale of guns in Colorado has gone up 30% in the last week.
Oh, yes, it would, because the only way to protect yourself from guns is guns.
That's the real. That's the real issue.
That's the logic, isn't it?
Yes.
Or not? Yep.
Yes. Anyway, moving on, before we get into politics of the United States, the Toronto Film Festival announced its opening night and gala presentations today.
Did you? We were about to say gala.
Yes, I did.
Gala
presentations.
Gala.
Highlight from a New Zealand perspective is the news that the New Zealand feature Mr. Pip will get a premiere screening at the festival.
That's good, isn't it? That's very good.
Yep. Yes. The film, based on the award-winning novel by Lloyd. Does he have a last
Jones.
Name? Jones. Lloyd Jones. Yep. Thank you. Stars Hugh Laurie and filmed last year in Bougainville and Papua New Guinea. Mr. Pip is one of only 60 titles announced for the Toronto Film Festival, which runs from September 6th to the 16th. Interestingly, one of their other galas is A Royal Affair, which has already opened here in New Zealand. And there are several other titles which are screening in the New Zealand International Film Festival at the moment that will be featured at TIFF.
I'm sure the people of Toronto, the people of Canada, have been wailing and gnashing their teeth at the fact that New Zealand got to see A Royal Affair before them. I'm sure the Twitter boards
are flashing wildly.
Yeah, have been alive to people complaining about that.
They're going mads. Oscar-winning screenwriter of Dog Day Afternoon, Frank Pearson, passed away on Monday at the age of 87. In addition to that win, he was Oscar-nominated for Cat Ballou in 1965 and Cool Hand Luke in 1967.
One of my faves.
What a film.
Mm. Yeah. Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah.
Can't be beat.
Pearson directed the Barbara Streisand remake of A Star is Born in 1976 and was still a working screenwriter. He penned an episode of Mad Men last year.
Which is not a bad effort either, you know, all things considered. And so that is the...
That's the news.
All right. Well, we're cracking along at a fairly good pace, aren't we?
We're getting ready for the Olympics. We're sprinting.
Yes, indeed.
2 days to go, isn't it?
I think that before the opening ceremony, some of the sports start, and the New Zealand women are playing soccer tomorrow morning.
You know, I'm not fussed.
No, I couldn't give a monkey's to be perfectly honest.
I do want to see the opening ceremonies because there's a very cinematic event every year. I remember being very excited about the Vancouver Winter Olympics opening ceremony. So,
and from a movie buff point of view, the Olympic opening ceremony this year will be interesting because it's directed by Danny Boyle, who made Slumdog Millionaire. So that alone will make it interesting from a
movie
point of view.
Hopefully no outhouses in there.
What? Oh, right.
All right.
Georges Duwois, you're terrible. Let me buy you a drink.
Hope for better luck in Paris.
You couldn't have gone at a better time. Paris is filthy with money. Why don't you come to dinner? Come and meet my wife.
I believe you've only just returned from North Africa. A handsome young soldier, homesick and alone.
But how could you be lonely?
The most important people in Paris are not the men, but their wives.
There's a good chunk of Bellamy. Si, you're our Parisian correspondent.
Georges Duroy, played by Patterson, of course, Mr. Robert Patterson. I saw this a wee while ago now, and I'd read a bit about it beforehand, and it was kind of, you know, I was getting the sense that it wasn't going to be up to much, you know, like it was a bit negative, the press out there. And so I went in there with this expectation, I guess, and maybe that helped me out a little bit, because I came out of it not totally enamored with it, but kind of thinking, oh, you know, well, this is kind of like just a bit of a light sort of fluff for a couple of hours. And it really doesn't, that's all it is. It doesn't really hit the mark in a number of places, but it's kind of fairly light. And actually, the less time that he's on the screen, probably it is more interesting.
Because the cast around him is pretty flash.
It is a flash cast. And this is why I kind of, you know, it's funny, over time as this has percolated away, I've sort of thought, well, actually, you know, how did they miss so many things? Because it's got this great cast, you know, it's got a fairly interesting story. And in places, you know, there's this hint, this small hint of a political story, you know, to do with Algiers and things, and what's happening there and the involvement of the media and what's happening in Algiers. And you kind of, and also this sort of double cross, you know, there's this double cross that takes place. And so there's this base of good stuff there, which somehow, through the way that it's written and the way that it's acted, it just doesn't hit the mark in a number of ways.
The trailer makes it seem like it's basically just a sort of sex comedy with a little bit of drama attached to it.
I wouldn't even say it's a sex comedy. It's just him having sex to try and, you know, get ahead in life and climb the ladder.
Yeah, right.
Social climbing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, because he comes back from the war with nothing, you know, living in Paris and he's destitute, and he basically bumps into one of his war buddies and hooks up with him and meets these women and slowly goes through all of them. He sort of slowly sort of sleeps with all of them, and there is his one true love, but in the end, you know, he sacrifices that for power and money and status and sort of sleeping with the right, marrying the right woman and to achieve that.
It's based on a novel, I think.
Maybe
I'm not sure if this is the first adaptation of it or not, but certainly. I mean, terrific cast around, and Kristen Scott Thomas is in it, and
that's the thing. It ticks a lot of boxes with that cast. You know, that cast, you thought of something. Wow, you know, that's strong. It's worth seeing.
But even that cast had some pretty weak moments. Like, Kristen Scott Thomas was good when she was kind of introduced, but then she sort of turned into this simpering, desperate.
Yeah, and she looked lost.
Like, yeah, and Uma Thurman wasn't a strong character really at all.
I thought Christina Ricci did a kind of half-decent job, because she was one of the more kind of interesting
characters.
For
me, Christina Ricci was the only interesting part of this film. Yeah. Like, we haven't seen her in cinema in a while. I think she's great. She's absolutely stunning, and I wanted to know more about her. I just wanted to split off and learn about her life, because she's the only thing that kind of kept me awake during this film, basically. Mm. I did not enjoy it. Robert Pattinson, pretty sure most of the scenes he was in was just his cardboard cutout, like, and they've, like, moved his lips or something.
And he just
thinking that for years.
And he just plays it as sort of cold and angry the whole time.
But what happens?
Yeah, but it's not really cold and angry, because it's almost like he's just naive, and then he's kind of angry for a while, but his face doesn't really change.
Simpering is what he does.
He's just struck in one mode, and I found that really, you know, disappointing, because I think, you know, there is a good story here. And there was some good actors, and really, I mean, it's clearly a vehicle to sort of, you know, push him along
the other way around. I suspect nowadays that he and Kristen Stewart are using their leverage, their Twilight leverage, to get some films made that wouldn't normally be made, and to try and stretch each other as actors. He just doesn't have much stretching in him, unfortunately. It's based on a novel by Guy de Maupassant, a classic French novel. Directed, this is interesting to me, by Declan Donnellan and Nick Ormerod. So first time directors of cinema, but very, very experienced in theatre. And they've had productions that have come to Festival of the Arts here in Wellington. And their theatre company and their work in theatre is just extremely well known. And they're quite gifted in stage terms, but it sounds to me like there's nothing particularly startling about the way that this film's made.
Not particularly. No. And I think just getting the most out of him, they obviously, you know, that whether it was them or
maybe
him,
they spent,
you know,
all their time trying to get a performance out of him and ignored the others.
And, you know, and the way it was acted, and the way it was all set up, and the staging and some of the cinematography probably would have been a fantastic stage performance.
Mm.
You know, it would have been really interesting, but it just didn't hit the marks. And as you were saying, there were like some sort of rumblings of political things, and maybe the book goes more into that, but it's almost like they hinted at the political, which would have been really, really interesting, but then they just were like, no, don't want to scare away the girls, just chick flick, sexy,
yeah, and
sexy time.
So then you start asking yourself whether the producers have got involved and made some recommendations in order to get the film sold.
And I think that there is this kind of almost, you know, there's an attempt at a criticism of the kind of class structure, you know, and he kind of has this, you know, well, at the end of the day,
he exploits it in the end.
Yeah, he does, and that's the thing. Like, you know, there's a line in there where I think he basically says, well, it's easy for you guys to say this, but you have everything, I have nothing, so I'm going to do what I have to do to get ahead and get what I want. And that's what he does. And so I think, you know, it does have some things going for it, but it just seems to me that, you know, given the wonders, the riches that they have to play with here, they kind of missed it on a number of levels.
Mm. Right.
And it's a real shame, because I think, I mean, I didn't come out of it, you know, going, geez, I really thought that was 2 hours wasted, but I just thought, well, you know, gee, with a different lead and with tighter writing and, you know, it could have actually been a very good film.
So missed potential there.
I think so.
I think a different lead would have made a humongous difference in that film.
All but right. I guess would it have been made? Is your point there?
I think so. I think that it is one of those things that the people like Pattinson are kind of a necessary evil nowadays. And
how often do you get a film like that with those three actresses in it? All you need is
Maggie
Smith or someone like that in there as well, and it's gold.
Yeah, and with the directors, it would have been a really big deal for the actors to work with them as well.
Yeah.
And it would have been a great experience for them. So it's kind of, I don't know, people leveraging off people, but the end product wasn't quite.
I think if you like your period pieces and you like sort of
Robert Pattinson,
well, just the whole dress up affair of it and the kind of look of
and,
Paris
and
that
it
sort
is
of thing,
and it
then
is
you'll
sort
come
of
away with something
literary,
other.
Isn't it, as
it
well?
It is, it is. So I think if you like those sorts of things, but just don't. You won't be startled. There won't be any revelations or anything sort of, you know, that
beautiful
come
costumes,
out of it.
Though.
All right. Two words, gentlemen and ladies.
I had Belle Tragique.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I toned mine down a little bit. It was kind of a pretty angry coming out of it this afternoon. I was like, but I'm going to go with Trey on Wii.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Who's this? Who's this? Who is this? What? K.D. Lang. This is K.D. Lang. Jesus and H. Christ.
He's very young,
Stella. That's no excuse.
She's obsessed.
I am not obsessed.
Yes, you are. You want her. Maybe you should marry K.D. Lang.
Well, don't think I wouldn't.
Oh, golly.
Look out, K.D. Lang.
How did I not see this? This sounds amazing.
It's brought some very, very pleasurable memories back for me. I watched this on Saturday afternoon, I think. It's Cloudburst is the name of the film. In screening in Wellington only, I think, it's a return from the Outtakes Festival. And the Paramount Picture Theatre here in Wellington has identified a little winner and decided to keep it playing. And I really hope that audiences all over New Zealand get a chance to see this, because it's a little ripper. It really is. To give you an idea about the story, it's set in the present day in Maine, I think, in a little sort of coastal community, and Brenda Fricker, who is an aging woman, and her supposedly best friend and flatmate, Olympia Dukakis, who's been looking after her. Brenda Fricker is blind and is getting a little bit frail, and she has an accident, and her granddaughter decides that she can't look after herself anymore, and she needs to be put in a home. Without realizing, because she's just completely blind to this whole idea, is that actually her flatmate, Olympia Dukakis, has been her lover and life partner for the last 30 years and is perfectly capable of looking after her. And so Olympia Dukakis, who's this sort of butch dyke, decides that she's going to spring Brenda Fricker from the from the old folks' home in the middle of the night. She breaks in, busts her out, and then they go on this kind of Thelma and Louise road trip for seniors up to Canada so they can get married. Right, so they go to Canada to get married, so that if they're married legally, then they can't be separated. And then they pick up a hitchhiker, who's this handsome young hitchhiker, who's a dancer, who's escaped from New York and is going to Canada to see his mother. And it's, you know, it's charming and funny and vulgar, and I mean, it's very sweary. There's a bit of nudity in there. It's just a brilliant little film with fantastic performances. Olympia Dukakis, as we know, won an Oscar for Moonlighting. What was that? What was the name of that film with Cher years and years ago? Mm. Anyway, yeah.
Moonstruck.
That's the one. Olympia Dukakis, fantastic actress, and she steals every scene that she's in. And this is she's very, very funny. And this is a film with oodles of heart and just brilliant. And if it does come to your neck of the woods, you know, seek it out, because it's going to be, it's a real contender for one of my top 10 films of the year, you know. And I've been telling everybody about it since I saw it on Saturday, and I just hope that people get a chance to see it.
Very good.
Yeah.
Two words
for that. Sapphic sensation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I have one more note for Bellamy.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Was produced by Studio Canal. After I was crazy about how Studio Canal and how everything they touch turns to gold, yep. It was the first time I've ever been let down by them, and I was very disappointed.
Actually, I just want to come back to Cloudburst. Sorry if we're going to go dodging around the way we are. Come back to Cloudburst for a second, and it made an interesting comparison with Late Bloomers. In terms of a relationship between older people, and this in Cloudburst, this is a relationship that's still full of passion, still full of love, still full of warmth. And it felt to me like a really positive, uplifting portrayal of a relationship in old age, whereas Late Bloomers, just it felt completely lifeless all the way through. So if you're gonna pick one, go and see Cloudburst wherever you can find it. And I think that we've done 4 reviews. That's not a bad effort.
No.
You can't handle the truth.
There you go.
All right. So So, that's our show for this week. Next week, we interview Lauren Taylor, the star of the new Kiwi movie Existence, which gets its world premiere in Wellington next Friday. You may remember her from Taika Waititi's Eagle vs. Shark a couple of years ago. Jean Reno is a Michelin-starred chef in The Chef, and we're going to do our level best to see if we can find a screening of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter before next week's show.
Yep, and we'll throw in The Princess of Montpensier as well, shall we?
Absolutely.
Let's do four again.
Yeah, and
I'm quite tired though after today.
You're a bit ahead of us on that one. What's The Princess of what about?
Montpensier.
Is it about a princess?
You know it.
In Montpensier.
Yeah.
It's a pretty...
How did I guess?
Pretty cool period piece French film. You know, it's looking good.
Right. Well, I hope to get to see that next weekend. That. Of course, the Wellington leg of the New Zealand International Film Festival starts with a gala tomorrow and gets underway properly on Friday. So a lot of our cinema going is going to be at their screenings. But we'll also try and get to see whatever else is released commercially as well. And we'll try and cover it all on next week's show. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to click subscribe in iTunes and wherever else you find your podcasts. So the latest episode is always downloaded automatically. Leave us feedback at the iTunes store, etc., etc., etc. And you can also give us feedback via social media.
Yes, on Twitter.
We love it.
We love it, indeed. And you keep sending us love, and that's great. You can find us on Twitter with our Twitter handle, @CinematicaCast, and on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast.
All right, this show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music is by Earl Van Dyke. It's called 6x6. You can buy that at the iTunes store. And we're leaving you with some more music. This is from the soundtrack of Magic Mike.
Yes.
And this is Beth Thornley's Wash You Clean. That's good night from me.
It's good night from me.
And good night from me.